For today, featuring the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a chapter-by-chapter, verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues his message, A Judgment Day for All Men, as we pick up in Acts chapter 24, verse 25. And now, with today's study, here's Pastor Chuck.
Paul began to witness to this man, Felix. Of righteousness, the way that God would have a man to live. Of temperance, Felix was a very intemperate man. And Paul was laying on him, hey, there is a judgment day coming for all men. And as Paul reasoned with him of these things, Felix began to tremble because he had a lot to fear from the coming day of judgment for the things that he had done, for the way that he had lived. And he began to tremble, no doubt with the conviction of the Spirit upon his heart. And he answered, go thy way for this time. When I have a more convenient season, I will call for thee. The man who defers making decisions. The man who postpones. Felix continued to postpone until finally there was always a conflict in Caesarea between the Greeks and the Jews as to whose city it was. And there broke out some 2 years after this incident of Felix procrastination, there broke out a big fight, mob violence, the Jews against the Greeks over the control of the city of Caesarea. The Jews were victorious in the fight, and so Felix ordered the Roman soldiers to side with the Greeks and destroy the Jews. And they killed hundreds of Jews. And then he encouraged them to go ahead and sack the houses of the wealthy Jews, going in, killing them, and just spoiling their goods. And so the Jews reported this to Nero, and Felix lost his authority, was stripped of the authority, would have been executed, but his brother Pallas interceded for him, and instead he was banished. His more convenient time never came, as is often the case of a person who defers his decision for Jesus Christ, waiting for some more convenient day. It will never be easier than today. There is a law of metaphysics concerning repeated actions and how it creates pattern responses in our brains. You ever watched a lady knit who had been knitting for years? They don't even look. You know, it's just what has happened is that they've got grooves in their brain so deep. All they have to do is, you know, set the pattern in their brain and, you know, sort of turn the switch and their hands go. And it's just automatic pattern responses because it's been done so much. They can do it without, you know, they can watch TV or they can sit there and talk with you and yet be doing their knitting because of these patterns that have been established in the brain. The grooves or the patterns are so deeply embedded that it becomes an automatic action. One that you don't even have to think to do. Have you ever noticed that many times when you were fighting with your own conscience concerning a wrong deed, what a fight and what a struggle it was for you, and after you did it, how bad you felt, how guilty you felt, vowing to yourself, oh, that's terrible, I'll never do that again. But the next time the issue came up, it wasn't quite so hard. to yield. You didn't have quite a battle as you did before against the evil. And it continues to create the patterns until finally a person can do without any pangs of conscience that which one time disturbed him tremendously. Paul calls that a seared conscience with a hot iron. That is, you've destroyed the sensitivity against evil. And that's always a sad case to observe. Any repeated action becomes patterned in the brain so that it becomes harder to break. Relearning is always a more difficult process than learning. That's why if you take up golf, you should spend the first few hours with a pro to get your stroke correct. Because if you learn the wrong stroke, it's awfully hard to correct and to get into that groove-type swing. Bad habits are hard to break because they've set the pattern in the brain. Now, when you continually are deferring your decision for Jesus Christ, you're setting a pattern, making it more difficult to accept. Each time you say no, it'll become harder to say yes. And that is why 9/10 of the decisions made for Jesus Christ are made while in the teenage years. 9 out of 10 Christians became Christians while they were teenagers, before they had set these negative brain patterns. And so Felix, though he trembled under conviction, passed off the decision. And he also had hoped for bribery, that money should have been given to him from Paul that he might loose him. He had heard that Paul had brought this offering, you know, to the poor saints, you know, why not for poor Felix, you know. And so he was looking for a bribe, whereof he sent for him the oftener and communed with him, kept giving Paul an opportunity to bribe him. He was looking for an excuse to release Paul. But after 2 years, Porcius Festus replaced Felix, and Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure, left Paul bound. And now when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days, he went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem, ascended, and you always go up to Jerusalem. You never go down to Jerusalem. No one ever says, let's go down to Jerusalem. It's always, let's go up to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him and desired a favor against him that he would send for him to Jerusalem that they might lie in wait and ambush him on the way. So Festus now has become the governor, replacing Felix. And when he went up to Jerusalem, immediately the high priest, now this was a different high priest, and Ananias had passed now from the scene in the intervening 2 years, a new high priest, but they were still so incensed against Paul that they were still plotting to kill him. So they wanted, they mentioned about Paul, let's bring him up to Jerusalem to stand trial here. And then on the way to Jerusalem, they were planning to ambush him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly to Caesarea. And so he said, let them therefore, which are among you who are able, go down with me and accuse this man if there is some wickedness in him. And when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down unto Caesarea. And the next day he was sitting on the judgment seat, and he commanded Paul to be brought. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about, and they laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. One thing about Roman justice is that you had to prove your case against a man. So though they made many complaints, yet they couldn't prove any. And while he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar have I offended anything at all. I haven't offended, you know, the law. I haven't offended the temple. I haven't offended Caesar. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, He had just come into office, and he was wanting to get on the good side of these people, accommodating them, answered Paul, "Will you go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me?" And at this point, Paul was tired of being a political pawn in the hands of the Roman governors, and he exercised a right of every Roman citizen, unless he was accused of first-degree murder, rape, or kidnap. Paul said, "Cesare appellat," the two words that any Roman citizen could utter when he felt that he was getting a raw deal in the local courts. "I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you very well know." Listen, fella, you're not fooling. You know that I haven't done them any wrong. "For if I be offender, I've committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die." I'm not afraid to die if I've done something worthy of death. "But if there be none of these things whereof they accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal to Caesar." Cesare appellat. The legal phrase that could be used. And so they had a consultation. And so he answered, "Have you appealed to Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou go." Now, notice, Paul is ready to die for Christ. He said that to his friends on the road to Jerusalem. "Hey, what mean you by these tears, you know, to dissuade me? I'm not afraid to be bound. I'm ready to die for Jesus in Jerusalem." But he's not going to just recklessly give his life for nothing. There are some people that recklessly and foolishly just expose themselves to danger. And I don't believe that that is God's will or even wise. So Paul used his right of appeal. And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came unto Caesarea to greet Festus. Now, this is King Agrippa, Herod Agrippa II. It was his great-grandfather, Herod, who had ordered the death of the innocent children at the time of the birth of Christ. His great-uncle, Herod, had ordered the death of John the Baptist. His father, Herod Agrippa, had ordered the death of James that we mentioned earlier. This is Herod Agrippa II. His wife was Bernice, who was also his sister. She also was a daughter of Herod Agrippa I. So you're getting So she was the sister also to Drusilla, who was the wife of Felix. So yeah, it's getting to be a mixed up family affair here. Now, Bernice had originally been married to her uncle, whom she divorced and married a wealthy Roman merchantman. And when Herod Agrippa met her in Rome, he enticed her to leave him and to come and live with him. So it was really a very unsavory situation that existed here between Herod Agrippa II and Bernice. Now, because Festus was new in the office, a new governor, and Herod Agrippa was still the king over a portion of the province, he came to greet him. And when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause to the king, saying, "There is a certain man who has been left in bonds by Felix, about whom when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have a judgment against him. To whom I answered, it is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die before he has been able to meet his accusers face to face, and to have a license to answer for himself concerning the crimes that he's charged with. Therefore, when they were come hither, without any delay on the next day, I sat at the judgment seat, and I commanded the man to be brought forth, against whom, when the accusers stood up, they did not bring any accusation of such things as I supposed. All they had were certain questions against him of their own beliefs or superstitions, and of one Jesus which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. So they were just, you know, arguing over Paul's belief in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him if he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be reserved unto the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said unto Festus, I would also hear the man myself. And Festus answered, tomorrow you will hear him. Now, Festus had no jurisdiction or ruling over Paul. So it was not really a legal process. Paul had already appealed to Caesar, and that's where Paul's next legal official hearing would take place. But this was just an entertainment for Herod Agrippa and his wife. It was just a big occasion to have a big time of entertainment. We'll listen to this fellow. However, Herod Agrippa was a student of the Jewish scriptures, and he had studied the customs and the manners of the Jews carefully, so that he is interested, no doubt, in what Paul might have to say concerning Jesus Christ. As we will get into Paul's defense before Agrippa, this will be brought out. So on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice, with great pomp, that is, they were dressed in their royal purple apparel. Festus was probably dressed in his crimson robes. And of course, there stood the legionnaires, who were the tallest of the Romans, the special elite guard, standing there at attention with their fancy uniforms. And the whole assembly of the notable people. It was a public occasion, you know, where the king might show off his glory. So he comes into the arena and all of the others. And probably this was done at the arena there in Caesarea that still exists to the present day. And you who have made your pilgrimage to Israel have had the privilege of sitting in that arena in Caesarea. And it's always just sort of awesome to sit there and to realize that this is probably the arena where Paul came to make his defense before Herod Agrippa. And so they had come with great pomp and entered into the place of hearing with the chief captains, the principal men of the city. At Festus' commandment, Paul was brought forth. And Festus said, King Agrippa, and all men which are here present with us, you see this man about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live anymore. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself has appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord. Wherefore, I have brought him forth before you, and especially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination I might have something to write. For it seems to me unreasonable to send a prisoner and not be able to signify the crimes that he's charged with. So Festus had been put in a real pickle by Paul. When Paul appealed to Caesar, because he was a Roman citizen, he had that right. Festus had to send him to Caesar. However, being just a political pawn and there are no real charges against him, if Paul comes to Caesar without legitimate charges, then Festus is in trouble, because he hasn't been exercising his position as judge in fairness, which the Roman government always sought. Fairness for the Roman citizens. And so Festus had a real problem when Paul appealed to Caesar, because there weren't any legitimate charges that he could make against Paul. And it would immediately be obvious to Caesar that Festus had failed to do his job as a governor, and it would look bad for Festus. So Festus was really sort of glad for this occasion, because he was hoping that by Caesar's listening to Paul, they might be able to get some kind of charges that will seem to be legitimate charges against Paul when he is sent to stand before Caesar, that at least there might seem to be legitimate charges. And so this is what Festus says. The purpose of this now is that we might formulate our charges against this man as we send him to Caesar, so that we'll have the formal charges that we might make. Because it really, doesn't seem right to send a prisoner and not be able to signify the crimes of which he is guilty. And so Festus was in big trouble. Hopefully now Agrippa will help him out by being able to formulate charges against Paul. As we get into the next chapter, we'll find out that unfortunately for Festus, it didn't work. And Caesar just said, hey, you've got a problem, and let it go at that, but did not really help in formulating any charges against Paul.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Acts on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. This message has been provided to you by the generous supporters of The Word for Today. For additional information about how you can support this ministry, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org. There you'll find free message downloads from Pastor Chuck, as well as links to our podcast and other resources to help you grow in your Christian walk. You can also call us at 1-800-272-9673, or you can order a physical copy of today's message by mentioning Acts 24 through 25. Again, that phone number is 1-800-272-9673. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May the Lord be with you. May the Lord bless you. May the Lord keep you by His power and in His love, that you might be God's instrument this week to share His love with others, that you might be a blessing to those that you come in contact with, as they sort of draw from your relationship with Jesus and are strengthened and blessed because of your walk with Him.
The Word for Today is excited to share a truly inspiring book with you, Harvest. This powerful story takes you on a journey through the incredible beginnings of Calvary Chapel Ministries. In Harvest, you'll learn how God led Pastor Chuck Smith and his family through over 17 years of challenges, preparing them for a ministry that would ultimately touch the lives of thousands. You'll also read about Raul Reese, who was just moments away from making a life-altering decision when a message from Chuck Smith on TV stopped him in his tracks and gave him new hope. Filled with real-life testimonies and valuable insights on evangelism, discipleship, and trusting in God's Word, this book is one you won't want to miss. Order Harvest today at twft.com or by calling 1-800-272-9673. Get your copy now and be encouraged by the amazing stories of faith. I'm your host, Kathy Parrish. Thanks for listening.
Church on the edge of town. People coming every day from miles around, for meetings and for Sunday school. And it's very plain to see, it's not the way it used to be.
This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.